Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. No Matt Moore today. I do have our good podcast friend, Ethan Sherwood-Strauss. Ethan, how's it going?
It's going okay, man. I just took a swig of tea. I'm excited. It's been a while. Let's get after it. I'm pumped. I just snorted green tea right up my nose.
This is a lot of energy from you.
A lot of energy. I'm not used to having it. Not used to displaying it to the listeners. I hope they're okay with it, Zach.
Yeah, I'm used to like the subdued like hipster Bay Area persona of like, you know what? Everything's just fine. Nothing's urgent right now. It's something you've kind of embraced, I feel like, especially with your San Diego roots.
Yeah, but part of this whole hippy dippy, just laid back, let it flow. Part of that ethos is this idea that you have to try something new. This is my version of what people do out here when they go to Tahoe or they go kayaking or they do something outdoorsy. I don't do that, Zach. I'm an avid indoorsman.
Okay.
Not an avid outdoorsman.
No, hold on. I don't believe that for one bit. You have Facebook pictures of hiking with your dog like every 2 days.
I might have just lied. Look. I might have just lied to service whatever point was popping to my head. It used to be true of me. The dog has forced me to be one of those one of those outdoorsy people with the minimal running shoes and the going out to Yosemite and all of that.
Sure.
You know, it's changed me. Yeah. I used to be that guy, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure. I'm sure it's the dog's fault.
It is. It's that four-legged creature's fault. He's barely sentient, but it's his fault.
I got angry at people last night as I was tweeting. I was going from this awesome tapas restaurant to the musical Wicked, which is fantastic. If you get a chance to see it.
It's Defying Gravity, man.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple of times, and it's been
Kyrie Irving's favorite musical is Wicked, by the way, just so we insert some NBA knowledge in
there. Yeah, that's probably true. And in it, I had this idea, this trillion-dollar idea, in which instead of movie theaters selling popcorn in popcorn buckets, they should sell bacon-wrapped dates. And I got all this pushback from people of like, dates are disgusting, they're only like for bowel movements and all this crap. And I was just like, no, this is wrong. Like, and I got mad because it's trust me, I've been a finicky eater in the past, but now as I've gotten older and wiser and wanted to experience more things in my wise age of 31 that I am, I've expanded my palate, and my God, bacon wrapped dates are one of the best things you can have.
Well, here's your problem. Pretty much anybody other than Brazilian people think you're crazy. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, you run into this issue where dates are very popular in the Middle East, where the dietary restriction means that there isn't going to be any bacon, whether you're Jewish or Muslim. So you have all this cross-section of date lovers who don't want that date wrapped in bacon. Number three, did you feel like Elphaba, you know, from Wicked? You were trying to defy gravity. You were trying to just ascend higher, and the public was bringing you down and attacking you?
I did. I felt a little green with anger, maybe a little Elphaba Hulk crossover there. For the four people who listen to this podcast that have actually seen Wicked, they're dying right now. They love that reference. That was great.
Kyrie Irving is one of them. I actually interviewed him. He had talked about liking Wicked in the past. I interviewed him, and when I mentioned it, it just got awkward. It just didn't go anywhere. It felt like we didn't know each other well enough for me to bring that up.
He's like, I just want to give you cliches. I don't want to bust out my musical knowledge.
Yeah, there was some uncomfortable laughing there. You know, he was just trying to promo the whole Uncle Drew campaign with Pepsi and all of that, and he didn't want that sensitive side of him revealed.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable. But yeah, if it's a religious thing and you don't want to wrap the bacon around, I get that. That I'm fine with. But if you're just saying like, ew, dates look gross, they're supposed to be gross, like, come on, expand yourself.
Well, here's – and eventually we'll talk about basketball.
Yeah, it's coming.
Maybe after an hour. Maybe. But before we got on this whole podcast, you were hating on raisins. You were saying that they were overrated. I dare you to really convey to the listeners why a raisin is worse than a date. What is this difference? Why?
The texture, for one. The raisin is – it's too wrinkled, which makes it very sticky almost, whereas a date, it's a little smoother, a little easier to get into. The dates just have more flavor, like just much more flavor, And I don't know if that's a size thing or what. And plus, you can wrap them in bacon. Like, you can't wrap a raisin in bacon.
This is all about how you can wrap it in bacon. Zach Harper has probably never eaten a date on its own.
Oh, how dare you!
He only knows it through when he goes to the Brazilian restaurant and they serve it to him with bacon.
One, Spanish, thank you very much. Two, it's just I can't even believe the horrible lies you are throwing, the horrible accusations you're throwing my way.
Well, it's been a while. I'm a little angry. You guys didn't invite me on to the do the Warriors preview. I was very hurt.
Yeah.
And so, along with the energy that I'm bringing to this podcast, I'm also bringing a lot of resentment, quite frankly.
Sure. No, I mean, you typically do, but this is a little more than usual.
Yeah, there's some seething. There's some seething, you know. I feel like God, what's her name? What's her name? The enemy of Elphaba who becomes the friend.
Glinda?
It's going to be a long podcast, guys.
It's Galinda with a G.
It is Galinda. That's an awful name. That G is terrible.
That's why she shortens it to Glinda. Spoiler alert.
Ah, oh, it's just that G. It's just like when somebody's named Gretchen, you know? That's
There's no G in Gretchen.
I guess it's a Gr.
It's a Gret.
I mean, it's one of the reasons why I don't like the sound of this is exactly what I thought we'd be getting into, but in Egyptian Arabic, it sounds worse than the other kinds because the way they pronounce G is G, as opposed to the Algerians who have the French influence and they pronounce it Je. That just sounds beautiful, like a Je, you know?
Yeah.
Jamila instead of Gamila.
Sure. Yeah. Speaking of sounding beautiful.
Yeah.
It sounds like this Warriors team wants to play some beautiful basketball.
Oh yeah,
Andre Iguodala came out and said he 50 wins was their goal to surpass, and there have been like little comments from maybe players or reporters saying that Harrison Barnes is wearing out players in these workouts, and that he just looks amazing. Is your good friend David Lee, is his time up?
My good friend David Lee. Look, David Lee is skinny. We have skinny David Lee. In the exit interviews, from what I heard, Bob Myers with Draymond Green and David Lee and probably Bogut said, look, you need to get in shape. You need to lose that weight. And they did. They're super skinny. So I don't know. I have long doubted the David Lee, but I do believe that fat is disguised. Fat is potential in disguise.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, you've made that clear.
Yes, I have. I've made it quite clear. And so I'm a little worried about hating on David Lee if he's showing up skinny. Maybe he suddenly looked like the All-American dunk challenge guy, and he's just flying around. And he's a totally better player. So I'm a little worried about that. But I do want to say this. You and Matt, you guys really...
Oh, here we go.
You depict yourselves as the wise men, the wise, reasonable men. Everybody else has these fiery opinions.
Oh no, have you heard this humility? I don't pretend to be wise at all.
I've just heard this in regards to David Lee, where the two of you are like, oh, Ethan's just this, you know, trying to run David Lee out of town
in
this Warriors contingent. And you depict me like I'm some sort of Visigoth, you know, with a torch burning with all these other hooligans outside of David Lee's house. Like when Wayne Rooney, when the fans of Manchester United surrounded his house,
you know, just
a bunch of people.
Don't give me soccer references, you know, I don't understand. Is he the bald British guy?
He is. He is. And what happened was when it looked like he was leaving the team, this is the opposite of running him out of town, actually. When it looked like he was leaving the team, just a bunch of hooligans who like Wayne Rooney, just British-looking dudes with, you know, buzz cuts and bad teeth and guys who just shout, oi, you know? I don't know why they shout oi and we don't shout oi, but they just surrounded his house and intimidated him into staying with that team. That's what happens in the soccer world that doesn't happen. In the basketball world in Cleveland, quite frankly, you should have pulled that move with LeBron in 2000.
Sure, absolutely.
anyway, with David Lee, look, I understand that David Lee is better than his backup. I understand that according to the style they were playing last season, he helped them win games. That this is true. But it's not a simple matter of if you take David Lee out of the equation, you just replace those minutes with his backup. They play an entirely different style or more of it if David Lee isn't in the picture. Now, I do think if he just wasn't on the team today, you know, if they if they just traded him for filler, there would be more risk of being worse because of an injury and they'd be thinner. But I also believe their ceiling is higher because in your quest to be these, you know, wise, rational men, Zach and Matt, who isn't here,
yes,
and just be very calm and say sample size. The Warriors did beat the Las Vegas Spread 8 games in a row. Like, that never happens. They did that in the playoffs after Lee went down, and we almost are in danger of underreacting to that.
How much of that is just the Spread is just trying to trick the public.
It is trying to trick the public, but it also tries to move according to if a team's playing really well and the Warriors outpace that. It is a measure of exceeding expectations. And wouldn't the public be betting on the Warriors too? Wouldn't the public be?
I mean, later in the series, absolutely, but not before. And you don't know that they wouldn't have beaten the Spread 8 games in a row if David Lee was in the lineup.
That's true. The counterfactual is an issue. Is an issue here, but I strongly suspect they wouldn't have. Hey, they even made a big run after he got hurt in that Denver game in game one.
Like, sure, okay.
they looked like a dramatically better team in that game the second he went down because they got to spread the floor. There was more space, and they were firing more 3-point shots, and that's really hard for defenses to deal with. If you spread the floor 4 out and you have to worry about Klay Thompson and Curry on opposite sides of the court, moving, crisscrossing opposite sides of the court, in addition to 2 other guys on the perimeter there, that's really hard to deal with. And they were just a better defensive team because it's hard to be worse. You know, it's really hard to be worse when you're replacing David Lee's defense with Harrison Barnes or Draymond Green. So the way I see it is just that he commands too much salary. I don't know if they would necessarily be a dramatically better team if they just, you know, he was off the team. They got nothing for him. But due to that $14 million a year, and their ability to maybe have a higher ceiling with that 4-out strategy that would come with better defense. People say like, oh my God, maybe the small ball only worked against Denver and guys would punish Harrison Barnes in the post. He's like maybe less than an inch shorter than David Lee, and I'm sorry, I do believe that he would be better at guarding fours than David Lee just because Lee's that bad, you know?
Yeah, so, I don't know that that's necessarily. I mean, you're not really picking up more offense. You're just picking up different offense, and
yeah, that's a good point.
And their offense was pretty good last year.
It was.
And I would imagine, I would assume it would be better this year just based on Bogut being healthy. Like, they were in the playoffs, they were amazing on offense when Bogut was in the game. He helped move the ball a little bit in the offensive rebounding or whatever. But defensively, they would certainly be better because David Lee is a terrible defender. And I get that, and I get the salary portion of it. But you got to stop pretending he wasn't all NBA third team.
Why is this something that I have to pretend? I thought that selection was ridiculous. I made fun of it on this podcast. I know it happened. It was just silly.
It wasn't silly. He had a great year.
He had a really good year.
You're upset that Curry didn't get to go to the All-Star game instead of David Lee. And that Curry, I don't believe, made the team, right? The All-NBA team.
As are most Warriors fans. It's funny. Warriors fans show their allegiance, and I don't think I'm projecting, where they were almost like, David Lee made the All-Star team and not Curry? They weren't like, woo, we have an All-Star. It was
kind of like, hey, the Warriors have an All-Star. And they're like, yeah, see, we told you we're great. And they're like, it's David Lee, not Steph Curry. And they're like, oh, really?
Oh,
that's
like,
not good.
I don't like that guy. I like the other guy.
Give me the guy that shoots cool.
Yeah, I don't. The guy doesn't really jump.
I think it's just because David Lee doesn't have an attractive game. Like, he's a very good scorer, but he doesn't have a good looking. Like, his jumper looks oddly compact, and he doesn't move all that well side to side. Like, he's, I don't know. He's just he dribbles weird. Like, I think it's just aesthetics more than actual production.
Yeah, no, there are things I like about his game and how skilled he is and how he combines that shot fake with a drive, and he's a smart passer. I enjoy the passing, but there is something to that shot. It is flat, and that he's left-handed, right? I'm not imagining that.
He's officially left-handed.
He's officially left-handed.
Unlike,
it's getting confusing in these parts where Tristan Thompson's just switching handedness all of a sudden.
Yeah, you're big into this hand-switching thing where you are really trying to convince yourself that Michael Beasley is a right-handed player.
He is right-handed. He's not. Just such a goofball. He's such a goofball that one day he chose to shoot left-handed. He's talked about it in interviews, and I think to myself, yes, there are all these other Michael Beasley problems that derailed his career, but maybe just like, you know, how fat is potential in disguise, maybe yeah. using the wrong hand is potential in disguise.
So it's like a Princess Bride. It's like a Princess Bride Dread Pirate Roberts thing. Like, you think you think he's just waiting to go, haha, I'm not left-handed. And then he's just going to dominate the league. He's been waiting. He's been waiting to get back to the Heat so he could team up with LeBron.
Look, I don't want to equate my experience in sports with NBA players, but I used to bat left-handed in Little League growing up because I just thought Ken Griffey Jr. was the coolest person on earth. Sure. That was the reason why. Sure. You know, it wasn't because I was better at it. It's like trying a tennis backhand, essentially. And I could hit the ball, but suddenly as an adult one day when I was playing baseball with my friends, I was like, oh, I was trying to swing right. I was like, oh my God, this was the right idea the whole time was to use my dominant hand for an activity. And I wonder if, maybe Tristan Thompson will be the litmus test. If he starts playing really well this year, we'll know that Michael Beasley should switch hands.
I feel like Tristan Thompson's just this weird, like, Canadian exchange rate problem. Like, he came to America and they were like, nope, you're left-handed.
He just had customs.
Yeah, and then for a couple
left-handed,
years...
Left-handed, stamped left-handed.
Right, for a couple of years he had to do it, and then, like, his... whatever visa was able to be renewed, his work visa was able to be renewed, and he got to like change it to right-handedness.
This is a common problem for Canadians.
It's a huge problem. Andrew Wiggins is really in for it. He doesn't even know.
You know, you guys get to come back over to the border to get proper health care. You're just going to have to deal with being the handedness we give you.
Right, I mean, exactly.
This is how immigration's gone a lot of the time, where they just give you names that you don't want. They just give you they shorten it. This happened at Ellis Island. You know, if you had a tricky name, they would just say, you're Smith. this has happened in the past, Zach.
No, I agree. I got a little grief from my lady friend who is actually in New York this weekend. With her mom celebrating her mom's birthday, and I said, hey, if there's time, like, Ellis Island is actually really cool if it's not all that crowded. I mean, it's usually pretty packed, but if it's not all that crowded, and for some reason,
if it's not all that crowded, you know, like it was the last time I was there in 1905, you know,
like my great grandfather used to tell me about.
Yeah,
that it's actually kind of cool. And my lady friend just started giving me grief because she thinks I'm just saying that because of the movie Hitch.
Oh.
Because that's like the first date. Yeah, and she, I mean, seriously, every time it's on, I watch it. It's the first movie she and I watch together. And so I'm like, I'm big into Hitch. I just think it's a great, great movie. And so she just, I think she discounts the fact that I actually went to Ellis Island. I actually enjoyed my time there learning about everything.
Yeah, well, anybody who hates my presence on the podcast, they can in part blame that island because I do have family who went through there, okay. who are on the wall. So it is a special place to me, and I completely forgot why we were tying this into
Michael Beasley is not right-handed. He's just
Michael
not.
Michael Beasley does not live in Ellis Island. Like... No, but he is. He's talked about this.
No, I write left-handed. I can throw with both hands. I bat left-handed, but I shoot right-handed, and my dominant hand dribbling is right-handed. Like, trust me, I think that at this point you know what hand you are.
But he has said that he's right-handed. He just shoots left-handed. You know what hand
he says, like, a lot of things. He's probably doing something that I'm not allowed to actually mention or accuse him of on the podcast.
Which hand does he grab the blank with?
I'll just assume you said spatula because we know he's a connoisseur of fine cooking.
Which hand does he grab the glass spatula with?
Sure.
Oh man! Should we we didn't talk about Iguodala though.
Maybe. Oh right. Andre Iguodala.
I have another theory about that. Okay. With Iguodala that just came up to me, just popped in my head. I was thinking, did you read? I wrote about it. He's a little brash. He's a little brash about his defense. Did you see that?
He's quite impressed with himself defensively, and with good reason. He's pretty good.
He is, but he wasn't like this in the past. I almost feel like there was that great piece that Matt wrote about his subtle defense last season, And I kind of think maybe Matt has turned him into an egomaniac.
That would not shock me.
Yeah, because Matt's just talking it up. He's almost like a Maverick Carter whispering, whispering in Iguodala's ears, like, you're not getting enough credit, man. You know, you're just carrying this whole team defensively. They're all dependent on you, man.
You just compared Matt to Maverick Carter. He's going to find a way to where I'm not going to be allowed to have you back on the podcast. This is your farewell episode.
Look, some sort of figure like that, you know, somebody who's propping you up.
I have a theory. Suddenly, I have a theory as to why he's so brash.
Yeah.
The FIBA World Championships.
He was
on the 2010 team, right? Or was he strictly on the 2012 Olympic team?
That's when this began. He at the World Championships started going to chapel with Steph Curry, and they started this sort of collusion process. And you know who else was in the chapel with them? And this would have been huge news had it been L.A. or New York and not the Bay Area. He was talking about how this all started when him, Durant, and Curry were going to chapel together.
Okay.
That this process began. I was thinking, like, if this is L.A., that would be just worth so many articles. Durant, 2016.
Well,
you know,
if they can get rid of David Lee's contract, they got the pieces to go after Kevin Durant. When 2016 happens.
I've pre-ordered my Kevin Durant Warriors.
Is it sleeved?
It is sleeved.
Of course it is.
It's actually the reason he's going to choose against it.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to sign on the dotted line, and then Lacob's going to walk in smiling with that sleeved jersey, like, here you go. And no, he's just going to have a change of heart right then and there and sign with the Bucks.
When Joe Lacob was at the Mayweather fight, you could see him in the crowd.
Yeah.
Hardly looked at the fight.
He's not exactly a tough guy.
I kept watching him. My vision would just glance up to him consistently. Him and P. Diddy. Those were the two guys I watched the most in the crowd. And Lacob hardly looked at the fight at all, which bothered me.
Well, I didn't understand quite why he was there, since he's just a Silicon Valley venture capitalist, and he doesn't seem like such a fight fan. So it wasn't the right scene for a Lacob.
No, not at all.
Not even a younger Lacob. Not even a Kirk Lacob. You know? I didn't quite get it. I don't want to go on a whole tangent rant about boxing. I know Floyd Mayweather is great. He's great at this sport. But this whole idea that we divide it up into weight classes, we really only do that for a select few sports, and then we take it very seriously.
Way too seriously.
We're talking about Mayweather's, like, the Michael Jordan of his sport, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, you know, for guys who are 5'6" to 5'9", that specific cut of humanity,
and aren't allowed to weigh more than 150 pounds the day of the fight, or three days before the fight.
Very specific slice of humanity.
Right.
Nobody better, but it's a little weird that we just interpret that as its own universe in the sport entirely, when Klitschko would probably just pound him into flour.
Right. It would be like, Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player of all time, but he was only allowed to play against shooting guards.
Yes, exactly. And I just think it's a little silly. I think it's a little silly boxing.
Yeah. No, I agree. Back to Iguodala. No, I think that time with Team USA, they just said, like, go play defense for us. They kind of took away his playmaking and his scoring, roles from him, and it was just go destroy that guy defensively, almost in a Scottie Pippen being unleashed on Tony Kukoc kind of way.
Oh yeah.
And I think that that's when it all started, where he was like, oh hey, I'm actually like he knew he was good at it, but he's like, I'm elite at this skill. I'm gonna use this to just make everyone's life hell and earn me some money.
It gave him permission, and I do believe that he thinks about defense more and he cares about it more. There were a few questions in the last press conference where he just changed the subject to defense, where the question was obviously about his offensive impact, and he made it about defense. And that's quite unusual, because I think most guys, we care about offense. The players care about offense. The fans care about offense. And it's this specific little micro community that cares about defense. And now the Warriors have two of them, with Bogut and Iguodala, and they have all these pieces, man. I mean, they have, when you think about it, they have four really good to great wing defenders. And
no, they really do.
Iguodala, Barnes, Klay Thompson, and Bazemore.
Yeah.
And, man, with Bogut, you give the if healthy tag, but that is a lot of defensive talent on one team.
You could, I mean, you can make the opposing team's life hell for four to six minute stretches at a time by just throwing all those guys out there together, and you can get away with it.
Well, this might bring me back to my my Captain Ahab quest against David Lee, but that's the only fly in the ointment here, right? I mean, that's the hole in this defense. And if you replaced him, perhaps with an average defender, you'd just almost be assured to have an elite defensive team. I think they will, though.
I think even with David Lee,
I think they'll be top five. That's my bold prediction here.
Yeah, I think if Bogut is healthy, I mean he's captain, you know, top three defensive teams for years in Milwaukee. I don't know why it would be any different, especially knowing they have Iguodala, knowing they have Klay Thompson, Harrison Barnes in the rotation. You know, if Curry is even average at defense, like I just think like they have so much potential defensively with Bogut as
knowing,
the rim protector.
That David Lee's skinny, you know,
sure.
That he's switched to his secretly dominant right hand.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. No.
Here's something for the Beasley. Not to change subjects.
You're just flipping the switches back like you're a DJ right now.
Hey man, I'm very excited. I'm pumped up. I've got the coursing through my veins. I want to say, look at Beasley's block shots. Go on that NBA stats site. Look at the video. He blocks 90%, over 90% of those shots with his right. When he doesn't have to think about it, when he just reacts, he reveals his handedness. It's like in Inglourious Basterds when he throws up the three, and it's the British three and not the German three symbol. Uh-huh. That's what's going on with Michael Beasley.
For those wondering, Michael Beasley does have 191 blocks in 354 games, so this is a significant part of his career.
Giant sample size.
Yeah, 100, he's half a block a game, and that's what you're studying to prove
hulking,
that he's right-handed.
Hulking sample size.
Sure. No, that's a great point you bring up. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Look, man, it's so righty. I haven't tabulated the numbers, but there are so many among those. It'd be some sort of crazy fluke of sample size if within that 191, you know, they just all happen to be right-handed.
Yeah. He's not right-handed. I just don't. I don't like you. You suss this out with me over GChat.
This is the core of all the tension in our relationship, Zach. All the tension in our friendship is that you're a traditionalist, and I try to think outside the box.
It's not that I'm a traditionalist. It's that he's.
You don't want to be. You don't want it questioned. You don't want the other possibilities. You're quite comfortable. You're comfortable just knowing that's his handedness.
This would be like me saying, you know what? I think Rubio's left-handed. That's why he can't finish. That's why he can't shoot.
Hey, I'm not rolling it out. Considering that layup.
Oh my god. Anytime, I mean, Deion Waiters can be left-handed now. Like that, you just can't say this guy decided to play with his wrong hand.
Maybe I can. He has said it, and based on how rarely he gets to the rim, how rarely he gets fouled, it's worth considering. It's not too late for you, Michael Beasley.
You and Andre Iguodala are both trying to run David Lee out of town, right?
Are you getting to his little comment about how David Lee is a different kind of guy?
Yes.
in the presser. That could have meant anything. You know, I don't want to jump the gun on this, but
set the scene. What exactly happened at this presser?
There was the presser at the Warriors practice facility, and he was talking about the different guys, and he was saying all these glowing things about the personalities on the team, and he said, and David Lee's and he kind of had a wry smile, a different kind of guy, and but we're both Midwest guys, and I guess a lot of the communication, something about nonverbal communication, and I didn't. It was odd. it's very odd. I mean, Lee is kind of a goon, and so maybe that plays into this.
Okay.
He's a sneaky goon, as I call it. You saw it in the fight with Hibbert, and he almost gets into a fight with LeBron whenever they play with each other. So maybe it's that. Who knows? Maybe it's nothing. Maybe he was just kind of messing around. I'm not sure, but hey, my senses are attuned to if the Warriors struggle on defense, and you have two guys in Bogut and Iguodala who pride themselves on it. Bogut, who's already screaming at David Lee all of last year when they're on the court together about his missed assignments. He's yelling at him.
Sure.
And throwing him under the bus to media and saying some things that aren't that great about Lee, just because that's who Bogut is. He's very blunt about his teammates. He does that to everybody. It's not just Lee specific.
Right.
He'll just tell you that Festus Ezeli has bad hands. But given that, that could be the source of a little bit of drama if they struggle defensively. So I'm paying attention to that.
I think that you and I were discussing this before we started recording, and I do have a theory.
Yeah.
That you game plan against a guy for so long, which these guys have been in the league for a long time, so they've studied game plans against each other. And with Iguodala's teams going against a team with David Lee, it's always been attack David Lee.
Attack the Lee.
Yeah, he's a saloon door on defense.
He's dehumanized David Lee. He's seen him as a target.
He's seen him as weak, as a weakness. It's the weak link in the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wants to, like, he has this in his mind for years to attack David Lee. And I wonder if that gets you to a certain point where it's hard for you to respect the person, even if you become teammates with them, because all you've looked at them for so long is just this weakness in the armor, trying to prevent your team from scoring.
That's very possible. I've never really thought about that, because I've always thought that the players, even if they oppose each other, like each other better than they like the fans, you know. You know, they share something more in common. They understand each other at a different level. That's really the absurdity of fandom.
Don't like any of them.
Well, it's just that they're wearing some sort of jersey that says they're in our tribe, they're in our city, you know, that like, oh, they represent me, but really they like the guy they're battling on your behalf way better than they like you, you know.
Yeah.
Like that's the absurdity of all of this. But I do think there's something to the idea, if you're used to attacking a guy a certain way, you build up just less of a sense of respecting him. And with Lee, I've always wondered. It looks like he's friends with Lakeup. He's a company guy that way, so maybe he has some charisma. I don't have a lot of knowledge of how popular he is within the team.
Right.
And what it's like to hang out with him.
Right.
I just know that he's not very popular with the local Bay Area media. And so maybe some of that comes off.
Because people just, you know, you see a white power forward who rebounds well and they just wish he was Troy Murphy because Troy Murphy was such a likable guy?
That was good sarcasm there.
No, I feel like the media, at least just talking about Troy Murphy
hated Troy Murphy.
I don't know. I've heard some stories where guys were just laughing about how like funny he was.
Man, maybe I got the story wrong. Maybe I got it incorrect. Maybe this is the issue. And I'm not going to say that this was Matt Steinmetz who shared these opinions with me. I'm not saying it was Matt Steinmetz who shared these opinions with me.
Yeah.
So maybe that was just particular to that dynamic.
I definitely didn't hear anything from not Matt Steinmetz. I've never talked to him on this subject. I've talked to other Bay Area people. So it could just be he was good to some, he wasn't good to others. That happens a lot in sports.
I just thought with David Lee, there's this funny moment where, not funny because nobody wants to see anybody get injured, but when he went down with that torn hip flexor, there was such a difference in the response and reaction from national media and people outside the Bay Area versus the Bay Area media, where outside it was, oh man, I feel so bad for David Lee. I feel so bad for him. You know, just he's having a great year, and for this to happen, it's just such a shame. And then the Bay Area media people, you didn't see any of that. It was David Lee, torn hip flexor, out for the season.
Even what about his courageous return to the court?
That was quite a moment.
It was quite a moment.
When I said moment, I instantly had this Pavlovian kind of shift back. Not Pavlovian, but just the flashback, because every time I was there for one of those playoff games, they played that This Is the Moment song about
Yeah.
That's the moment they were talking about. That's the moment Macklemore was talking about, was that David Lee returned. This is the I don't get why do you throw your hands up like the ceiling can't hold you? That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
It makes no sense.
I don't find ceilings to try to hold anybody anyway.
Was it a ceiling? It's the building can't hold us. Throw your hands up like the building can't hold us. Look, I'm not paid to know Macklemore lyrics.
Why would the building want to hold you?
I don't get it.
Is this a capacity thing? Is this like a fire marshal thing?
It's just not a very well thought through lyric, you know. It's just not. It's a fun song. I agree that we should really talk about this cool moment. It fits with the basketball really well, but the whole hands up, like the
DJ Khaled was much better at it with the All I Do Is Win, where the hands go up and they stay up.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then they go up, down, up, down. It's instructional. It's true. Sometimes your hands just go up, but it's not because you're trying to burst through a ceiling necessarily. It's more of a, I think, a circulation test.
That was like when Manu really popularized the Euro step in the NBA. It's just people weren't thinking you can step sideways. You know, right. You can zigzag with those steps. He just blew everybody's mind. It's like, yeah, throw those hands up.
I know how protective you are of your own innovativeness in regards of looking at the game. And you wrote that wonderful thing about Šarūnas Marcelionis and his Euro step.
Thank you. You're the only one who read it. Thank you for that.
But did it shatter your ego when, I believe, maybe it was Curtis Harris, who we're mentioning a lot on this podcast lately. Maybe it was Curtis Harris who found video of Elgin Baylor doing the Euro step, which would have been 20, 30 years before Šarūnas.
It didn't shatter my ego.
It hurt though, right? It had to have bruised it.
Maybe a little slight. It skinned my ego. Yeah. It got skinned. You know, my ego got a boo-boo.
Right.
The way I feel about it is just that even if people did it, it didn't become a trend. Not to do the cliche thing I'm about to do and reference Michael Gladwell
as well. Well, there's like a Mikael or Michael Gladness, so that's pretty close.
Mikael Gladwell. No, but the idea of tipping and when something becomes a trend, I just believe that what happens there is you had a few guys who did this thing, but they didn't do it often enough and with enough success that it became a trend, and then it slowly built after that, where you had a few European guys try it, and then Manu came over and he was so great that people took notice.
Yeah. Okay, I get that. Speaking of Malcolm Gladwell, I'm reading The Sports Gene by David Epstein.
Oh. Yeah.
And it's really good, but it's brought to my attention, like, lately, the last two books I've read were The Skies Belong to Us, and I tweeted about that, just saying, like, hey, by the way, I mentioned it on the podcast earlier, but this is the book. It's really good if you get a chance to read it. It's just really fascinating. And the author of the book had clearly been searching, like, Skies Belong to Us, because I didn't at him or anything. And he retweeted my tweet, even though he doesn't follow me, which is like, okay, that's fine. And then I had put out a question. I was about to start reading The Sports Gene. And is that what it's called? I'm pretty sure
that's what it's called. I've heard him talk about it in interviews.
Yeah, I was about to start reading it, and I was like, has anybody read this? You know, what do you think? And so David Epstein tweets me, and he doesn't follow me, but he's clearly searching out The Sports Gene. And he says, I've heard the book is pretty good, but the author's photo is awful or something like that. And so I was like, oh, funny, you know, I get it. But now I'm just like, I don't feel like I can tweet about any book I read, because now I feel a lot of pressure that the author is going to come try to piggyback on my tweet or attack it in some way.
I think we should get this part of the podcast where Zach complains about being too famous sponsored, perhaps.
It's not a famous thing. It's a search engine thing. I mean, I've become pretty famous. I've been recognized.
You're kind of like a big deal.
Several times.
Kind of like a big deal. Look, this looks like the death of publishing right now, where authors are just, there's so few things are said about their books and so few books are read that they're on Twitter all day just looking to glean a little bit of response and reaction.
Awesome, because I expect to have work done and have a book written by the end of next summer. That's my goal. I've mapped out everything I need for the book, and now I just have to go get it. And so by the time I finish it, hopefully the publishing industry will be dead. So it'll be super relevant.
Can I write the foreword for your Ricky Rubio biography?
You know what? I was actually going to have you. I was actually thinking about including you on this, because it is something that I think you would enjoy. But after that slight.
It's not a slight.
Oh, come on.
It's an assumption. It's not a slight.
I just questioned the other day whether or not he could lead an elite offense in the NBA.
Wow, that's a big step for you.
Well, one, thanks for reading my work, because clearly you have no idea what I'm talking about. And two, because
I was reading your stuff today on Corleone Young and all that stuff.
Thanks. My rabbit hole post. Work.
I know of your work.
No, but I questioned it the other day of, like, I looked at all of the top five offenses of each year since the rule changes, and which spans the last nine seasons, and I looked at the shooting percentages and, like, the usage rate and the assist ratio of all the point guards of those teams, and only one point guard, Mario Chalmers, who obviously had some help, shot under 40% from the field.
Well, there's this issue right now where it seems like it's more important for a point guard to shoot than for him to pass, because most point guards have to be guarded from three-point range, and if your guy doesn't, then you're at a spacing disadvantage. So I believe it's possible to have a great offense with a point guard who can't shoot, but he has to be exceptional in the way Ricky Rubio is exceptional,
and the thing is that I mean, if they ended up sixth, then that's still obviously an elite offense that's really good. I just picked five as like an arbitrary number. But the immediate response I got from a lot of Wolves fans was, yeah, but his passing is so exceptional, it should make up for it. And I was thinking, like, well, yeah, I thought so too, but then I looked at all the numbers and it's never happened.
Well, what the Wolves have going for them, at least, is that is a spacing disadvantage, except unlike a lot of teams, they have, when healthy, probably the best stretch four in the game to make up for it. So they do have that.
And they have a couple of incredible catch and shoot guys with Bundger and Kevin Martin.
Yes. So they do have shooting. This is going to be an interesting year for them in that way. I've wondered the same thing about John Wall too, where John Wall signs that max contract and he's an incredible talent, but I don't know if he never fixes that shot. I'm not sure, to use a million double negatives, about his ability to lead, to not lead.
Sure.
Really great offense.
I mean, I think with him mainly, it's just he's also not surrounded by a lot of talent in terms of offensive talent. Like when he's playing with, like, the options for him at small forward have been Trevor Ariza or Jan Vesely or, you know, Martell Webster, who can shoot the three but doesn't do much else. And it's like, if Trevor Ariza is a big part of your rotation at the same time that Emeka Okafor is a big part of your rotation, you're just not going to be a good offensive team.
Ariza is just one of those names where you just feel ugh.
I was never
those bad wings. Those wings who aren't that good and can't shoot that well.
I was never a fan of his, and he surpassed my expectations for him, which were very low. So I guess he got me there. But I still, like, I look at him, I'm just like, I would never want that guy on my team.
It's just Ariza. I mean, he was exciting when he was younger and he was athletic. And he was a little bit unknown because he came to the league so young, with not that much of a college background. Didn't he have, what, a year at UCLA? Am I imagining that?
That sounds right.
Is right-handed or left-handed?
He's right-handed.
He's right-handed? Good.
He says he's right-handed, at least.
He says. Yeah.
Yeah, he spent 1 year at UCLA.
Yes, great. And so he was exciting then, but then this thing happens that it's sort of depressing if a guy is athletic and then the athleticism wanes and then he can't shoot and he still can't shoot. It's just gross. It's just a gross process.
Yeah, it really is. At least with Al-Farouq Aminu, he's got a fun name to say. Trevor Ariza is just not a fun name.
That's the trajectory for Al-Farouq Aminu, who I thought I had some high hopes for, really. I'm a little disappointed at how that's all turned out.
Well, what I like about him is he can't shoot, but he doesn't shoot.
Yes.
Like, he just attacks the rim or he moves the ball. And so that I appreciate. Trevor tries to shoot.
You know, I don't know if that's the correct strategy. This, to me, was the major difference. I felt like in many ways John Wall and Rondo were similar players, and the big difference between them was that Wall would shoot when open and Rondo wouldn't. And I didn't know which was the right approach, considering that they both were equally bad shooters at the time I was comparing them. Right now, it might be a little bit different. Wall might have gotten a bit better at shooting, same with Rondo. But it's funny because there is something to be said for the development you gain by just continuing to shoot when you're a bad shooter, because at least there's a chance, even though hurting your team while doing it, that you'll improve. Plus, if you're shooting and you're confident, you might just trick the defense into having to guard you.
Is this a kind of a thing of like early point guards turning the ball over is a good thing because it's trial by error, or trial and error, you know, baptism by fire, all that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, trial and baptism by fire. That sounds like a very painful process. I don't want to join that religion.
No, it doesn't sound like there's a lot in it for you.
Now we dunk your head in the fire. It sounds awful.
Do we have anything else to discuss before you start ruthlessly attacking my 49er fandom?
Oh, well, no, we don't have anything to discuss before that. But I do want to discuss that because, look, you know, football's going on. We can talk a little football at the end of this podcast, which you're doing right now. But I have to say, Zach, this is the most Sacramento thing you do. Of all the things you do, I mean, maybe meth would be more Sacramento thing.
Oh, how dare you? Sacramento.
Tom Ziller, don't come across, you know, don't come down to the 80 and kill me.
How dare you? One, don't call it the 80. That's so Southern California of you. And two, Sacramento is not Chico, thank you very much.
I'm just saying, your disdain for the Bay Area, your ridiculing of Bay Area people, you just sneer at them and you root for the 49ers. It's a very Sacramento thing to do. And I just want you to at least, you got to choose. You got to, either you embrace the Bay Area, you know, you're nicer to us, or you drop the fandom. You know, I just don't believe it can be both.
One, this is just an insane request. Just insane. Two, growing up, most sports allegiances are either come from regional stuff or from a family member, right? Mm-hmm. And so I became an Atlanta Braves fan because my dad's from Atlanta and he was a huge Braves fan and we watched him when I grew up. And so that was a cool thing to do with my dad. So that's why
I'm impressed that you made it through their boring announcing to remain a fan afterwards.
Oh my God, I can't. The thing is that they're announcing.
Jones, the ball, it's deep. Yeah, there you go. Grand slam to win the game. Yeah.
Wow, I'm surprised you actually pulled Chipper Jones out of your lexicon of baseball names.
Yeah, he only played 20 years. So eventually, I pulled the name down.
But so, like, that's where I got my baseball fandom from. And then my dad moved out of Atlanta in the early to mid-70s, and he had been in the Navy before that. So, you know, he was at 18. He was basically out of the South for the most part. And so he wasn't a Falcons fan. He wasn't a Hawks fan because it was really around that time where they came to town and he left. So like, there's no real allegiance there and he's more into college football anyway. So growing up in Sacramento, you can choose, you know, if you're going to go regional, you either choose the Raiders or you choose the 49ers. And, it was very apparent at a young age that I was eventually going to learn how to read. So the Raiders were out. That's just the rules.
I like that setup.
Yeah, and so, and only to cement that, I worked for the Raiders for a year.
Oh man,
and it was awful. It was an awful experience. And so you get exposed to these certain fan types when you do that kind of stuff. When you live in the area, when you work in the area, and I have to say, you know, the fans of Bay Area teams are quite loyal and they're quite rowdy and. And I appreciate that aspect of it, but just not for me.
Yeah, there's something about the fan base up here. It's almost like an East Coast city on the West Coast, because unlike the other West Coast cities, especially in Southern California, it's old. So you have multi-generations.
Yes.
You have it became a thriving metropolis in the mid-1800s, you know, as opposed to L.A., which really took off maybe around the 1930s and well after the World War II boom. So it's got that kind of crusty, angry edge a little bit that the East Coast has.
During the Gold Rush, too, I might add, which is just me celebrating my home state's history.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a fan of history above anything.
You're a fan of history. That's the main determinant, obviously. I mean, how dare I even question that?
Exactly.
So there is this passionate aspect, but I feel like that's not your objection. I think you hate the Bay Area. I think you hate certain Bay Area things. You hate Bay Area rap.
Bay Area rap sucks, okay?
in the way that a lot of people say, if I could go back in time, I would kill some sort of evil dictator. You know, you would do that with Mac Dre, but before he actually got killed. You do it before he got popular and then got killed. That would be your guy.
Pre-murder someone who was killed.
Yes, that's exactly what happened, just because you stand the cult of personality that formed around him, and you know, all the rap culture here of people wearing tie-dye Mac Dre t-shirts and all that stuff. And there's something that you don't like.
That's the thing. I love the Bay Area. I love San Francisco. I love Petaluma. I love Sausalito.
You're so white right now. You've never been more white. This is coming from somebody who's very white. San Francisco.
I love Carmel. I love Monterey. I love the coastal part of the Bay. The inland part of the Bay, I can do without.
The inland. So wait. Are you talking about? Are you throwing my East Bay into there?
Oh my God! I've not only thrown it in there. I've battened down the hatches. I've latched it in there.
Oh my God! It's just disgusting. Like what a pussy devil you are, Zach. You know, you're out there in Petaluma, just scared of East Bay area, sneering at it. Oh my God, you're just like the typical Kipter, SF Gate, whenever they have a story about Oakland. That's what you are right now. I'm offended by it. I don't like it. You wouldn't spend some time in Oakland and Berkeley? Is this what I'm hearing?
No, I mean, they put an IKEA in Sacramento, so there's no real need to go to Berkeley anymore.
Oh my God.
Oakland's fine. Like, I don't know. I spent enough time there on the weekends during my time working for the Raiders that, I don't know. I've seen it. It's fine. I got to see Black Star at a Oakland theater. What is it? Fox Theater?
Yep.
That's the thing? Yeah, that's an excellent theater. I would go to Fox Theater.
You got to come back because right now it's changing hilariously. It looks like a Sim City. It's the Brooklynification of Oakland is rapidly accelerating. I've never lived in a place where the terrain around me was shifting so dramatically. And it feels like a gold rush. It feels like a second gold rush of gentrification right now. And maybe you'll like it better if you come back. I know you're a foodie. I know you like to Instagram that food. Right now, there's this foodie explosion. Danny Chow is coming up, I think, in a couple weeks, and we're gonna go hit some spots.
I've been to Concord. I've been to Richmond. I've been to the Hilltop Mall. I've been to Martinez. I've seen it. I'm good.
For you podcast listeners who don't know, Richmond is maybe the worst city on the West Coast.
Well, does Martinez count as a city? Because I would say Martinez is the worst city.
Martinez is boiling hot, and pretty bad. Concord is where my family lives, and no, that's not great either.
Yeah,
it's not. But he's naming places, so you know, non-Bay Area podcast listeners, he's naming places that you wouldn't want to go to. He still has this aversion.
If you want me to sound really even whiter.
Oh God!
I don't like San Jose, but I like Santa Clara.
Oh jeez, Jesus! No wonder you moved to Minnesota. Oh my God!
I love spending time in San Francisco. San Francisco is a great city. I just can't stand. And even my fellow 49er fans, you know, there are 49er fans that killed somebody recently or beat somebody up. I'm not a fan of that.
Well, yeah, nobody's a fan of that.
No, that's the thing. Raiders fans would be proud of that.
I don't know. I just feel like
I saw somebody get pushed
Raiders
over.
Fans who have adopted the Niners after a decade of Raider failure.
I saw a Jets fan get pushed over in a porta potty.
Wow.
In the parking lot after they warned him for 20 minutes not to go into the porta potty, and he thought they were joking, and they pushed him over, and he came out covered in crap.
Oh God! I was at a Sharks game once, and I
don't even pretend to like hockey. This is ridiculous.
No, I don't like. But this is something that we share. We don't really like hockey, you know. Yeah. I'm against you. I'm against you on soccer. You know, I'm your enemy. But on this one, I'm your ally.
Okay.
But I was at a hockey game, and by the way, I'm sick of all these people that are like, oh my God, but when you go to a hockey game, it's the most amazing experience. You know, on TV, maybe not that great, but when in person, there's nothing. I've been, it's okay. It's flat out, it's okay.
I will say it's a lot more enjoyable than watching on TV. I've been to, I think...
I would go to a basketball game, though, over it, just every time.
105 times out of 100. I would buy two tickets for five of those games.
What happened, though, was that there was a New Jersey Devils fan. They were playing the Devils, the Sharks were. And at the end of the game, he gets into an argument with a Sharks fan. Now, they're at the top of a... They're at the top of a series of steps. You know, we're up in the rafters.
Yeah, you're trying to pretend to still be a man of the people.
Yeah, yeah. They're in the... I don't know. I only go to the press row these days. I don't... I have no idea. No clue. They're in the peasant section.
Sure.
I was having a lark. I was slumming it. I was slumming it with the people.
You left your press box for the just to go see what it smelled like up there.
I was taking notes. I was like an anthropologist studying humans there. But so at the top row, this short Sharks fan, big fat Devils fan, he puts his leg up and he kicks the Devils fan, who then rolls down 20 steps, just rolls, comes, you know, gets up bloody face, and an old granny in a Sharks, I know it's not jersey, hockey fans, I know it's a sweater.
Call it a jersey.
Yeah, and a Sharks shirt.
No, it's a jersey. I don't care if it's made out of sweater material.
In a Sharks jersey, and this old granny just throws a beer on his face, his bloody face, with some sort of crazy witch yell to bring it back to Wicked. Like,
Well, it's a good thing that guy still had so much potential. That fall could have really hurt if he didn't have all that pudginess to absorb the contact with the ground.
Yeah, it sounded like the sound effects for Flubber in that movie. So he was bouncing, it was like boom, boom, boom. It sounded like that as he was bouncing down the steps. And I thought, man, I don't know if the hockey experience is for me. I'm just gonna hide again in the press row from the people. They're scary. Sure. They're unpredictable. They're violent. You know, I'm just gonna stay away.
I have yet in my 2 years here. I've yet to go to a Minnesota Wild game. I feel like I'm gonna remedy that this season. I'm also taking a road trip down to Kansas to see Andrew Wiggins at some point because I found out it's only like a 7-hour drive.
I like that this wasn't – you didn't know that before.
I have no idea, like, distances in the Midwest. Like, I mean
– Oh, it's very confusing.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, apparently Chicago is just a 6-hour drive away. I can go to all these places I never thought I would go to just by car. So I think I'm going to try it. But I'm going to wait till there's snow on the ground.
What about Canada? I mean, the only drawback there is that they're going to make you be left-handed when you cross over there.
Like, I write left-handed, so are they going to make me write right-handed?
You're well prepared then.
Yeah, you know, I can go back and forth there.
You could really corner the market on Wiggins because, you know, I'm from California. I don't, for all I know, Toronto is right next to Minneapolis. You know, it's probably
really not.
Stone's throw. So you can really, you know, you can drive down to Kansas, and then you can just pretty much backflip into his native country of Canada. Is he even from Toronto? I'm just guessing that because nobody in Canada isn't from, to use more double negatives, Montreal, Toronto, or Vancouver. There's nobody out there.
Right.
I mean, geez, this is obviously the point we're coming to at the end of this podcast, but the place that fascinates me in Canada, and if we're already going to cities that don't have a lot of people in Oklahoma City, I think we should really blow it out and go to a place that's completely depopulated. The Northern Territories of Canada and those other provinces, those territories, those three territories of Canada, larger than all of Mexico, with fewer people than conquered California, because there are about 100,000 people in a landmass as big as Mexico, because there are so few people up there. That, to me, is crazy. And, you know, maybe we should move a team there just to see what happens.
You can't traverse the snow. I've watched enough Ice Road Truckers. I know it's too
in
hard.
The city, in Nunavut,
that's which, made up. There's no way that's actually a word.
Made up stat. That's one of the territories. One where I believe 40,000 people live, and it's bigger than Alaska. They built a school, and it's so frigid, it's so cold, that the school looks like some sort of futuristic just cube. It's a series of white cubes with no windows because it's too cold to have windows. I think you would create a really interesting-looking stadium if you were forced to build it there.
By the way, Andrew Wiggins is from Thornhill, which is a suburb of the Greater Toronto Area.
Of course, because they're all from those three cities. Nope. And then there's Sirit Sohi, he's from Edmonton, which is crazy to me that anybody's from there. You know, that's
yeah.
Just...
I'm not good enough with my Canadian geography to know what is above me right now. but I
haven't turned around and looked.
I haven't looked yet. I did drive up to Boundary Waters area, and I'll actually be going there in a few weeks for something for a friend, where you're like right there. Like, we're just on the other side of the border before you enter Canada, but it's I've never made the plunge into Canada, so I don't know if Montreal is on the other side of that border. I know it's not Vancouver, and I know it's not Toronto. Much to your dismay, Toronto is actually quite far from us.
It's actually near Buffalo. You know, sadly, yeah. that's too bad. It's a fascinating place, that Canada. How nobody could live there, but they have three world-class, world-famous cities is very curious to me. I don't know how they did it.
It's almost like they're a country.
And they're taking over basketball. They have two number one picks in a row.
They're not taking over basketball.
They're not?
No.
You heard it here first. They're not. Why aren't they?
Because we're the United States of America.
This is true. That's an irrefutable fact.
Yeah.
We are the United States. Because
we've proven time and time again that as long as we take basketball seriously, we're the greatest basketball nation in the world.
This is true.
And it's not close.
We are the best at basketball, despite everybody lamenting AAU and how it's ruined everything.
Oh, it really
meanwhile,
has.
Meanwhile, we've maintained our edge as the best at this sport. I am a little worried. What if Bennett becomes a great player and then Wiggins becomes a great player? Could we lose to Canada in basketball?
No.
I mean, we just have to fold as a country.
Not losing to a team that is going to sport Corey Joseph and Mike Kabongo as the starting guards. That's just not going to happen.
But if those guys are two transcendent talents, I don't know. I mean,
no, I do know. We still have LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook and Kevin Love and Tyson Chandler and Dwight Howard. Do you want me to keep going? Blake Griffin?
I think that's
DeMarcus
enough.
Cousins, your boy Paul George.
Look, Paul George is your issue. Your issue is Paul George.
Right, you cape up for him.
No, I don't.
Oh my God!
This is not true. I defend his defense, which is magnificent. But I am with you on how people went crazy in the playoffs and completely overrated him. Just the idea of him being in a duel with LeBron was so farcical. No, I'm sorry. LeBron's not high-fiving him to tell him he's next. That's just not true. He's high-fiving him to tell him. And by the way, that's pretty white. If you call it high-five like I do, if you call a dap a high-five, you might as well just be hanging out in Sausalito and Petaluma with Zachary Harper, you know? I'm with you on the Paul George issue, Zach.
Yeah, you cape up for him. I think we're done here. I think we've thrown enough.
Let's
baseless accusations.
We'll go to Sausalito. We'll enjoy a nice date. We'll bring out a baguette and brie.
No, we gotta go to Sushi Ron.
Sushi Ron, that works too.
In Sausalito, that is the place to go.
Let's ride bicycles through the nature like Wedding Crashers, like Rachel McAdams and Owen Wilson.
We could do that.
Chrissiest time.
We'll do that, and then we'll go to Sushi Ron. We'll sit at the sushi bar, and they do some amazing things with like fish and torches and cherry wood. I mean, my God, it's just it's delectable.
I can't wait. So it's been enjoyable talking.
Oh, it's
45% basketball with you.
Yeah, rough. We went through Wicked. We went through how much you hate David Lee and are bringing Andre Iguodala onto your side. We discussed my fandom. I feel like this is a very fulfilling podcast.
We defied gravity, man.
We did defy gravity. Ethan Sherwood-Strauss, follow you at Sherwood-Strauss on Twitter. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks for having me.